Insider Radio, part of TheFinsider.com and the SB Nation Network. And now your co-hosts, MC Money, Surin the Creepy Soccer Dad, and Houts MD.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Finsider Radio. This is MC Money, joined here by Surin the Creepy Soccer Dad and Houts MD. And the Dolphins are coming off a 27-10 loss against the Baltimore Ravens. It always seems like they can never, ever beat the Ravens, whether it's preseason or regular season. But as we know, the preseason, the final score really does not matter. The Cleveland Browns going 4-0 last preseason, and look what happened to them throughout the entire season. Baltimore Ravens a 4-0 this preseason. The Miami Dolphins 0-3. Again, as we said last week, before we ended the show, when we were previewing the Carolina Panthers game, when we were reviewing the Panthers game and previewing the Ravens game, we said, yes, there are silver linings you could take from games. There are positives. There are negatives, despite trying not to overreact way too much or, you know, going from one extreme to the next. What jumps right out at me, boys, before we really dive into it, I want to touch on one main topic, and that is the backup quarterback. But before I get to that situation first, I just want to point out how the second, third, and fourth string defense have given up leads or have given up the game when they have come into the game. And that is a little bit concerning. And while they all won't be on the field together at the same time ever again in the regular season, they will in game four of preseason coming up against the Falcons. They will never, ever, ever in the regular season be on the field all at the same time. So we can take a silver lining out of that.
In our view.
What I want to talk about is the backup quarterback situation. This is getting a lot of attention nationally, locally, and on Twitter and all social media platforms and on message boards. Right now, the Dolphins got David Fales, Brock Osweiler, and Bryce Petty. It looks like from Adam Gase's latest comments that Bryce Petty is out of the picture because he stopped short of saying it's going to either be Osweiler or Fales. He also didn't rule out hanging on to both of them. Both of them looked terrible against the Ravens. Adam Gase defended them a bit, saying they had no chance behind that offensive line that was in the game. I can buy that part. David Fales has shown flashes. He showed flashes against Buffalo in the regular season game of Week 17 of last season. He's shown a few flashes this preseason as well. Osweiler just looks like he's done. I think the guy's confidence is completely shot as a quarterback. I don't think he has anything left in the tank there. Bryce Petty has looked the most impressive out of all of them, but as we know, David Fales is Adam Gase's biggest pet project. So for you, Houts, you know, looking at this quarterback situation, where do you see this all shaking out, and should we be concerned?
I'm not sure we should be concerned because I think, like we saw last year, as soon as Ryan Tannehill went down, the season was all but over. So I know a lot of us wanted to draft a quarterback, maybe not in the first round of this draft, second or third even, but we wanted to bring in a guy so that situations like this didn't come about. I mean, David Fales, he's looked decent. He had his moments last year in the regular season finale. Brock Osweiler has been complete garbage. If the Dolphins waste a 53-man roster spot on him, I would throw up in my mouth. That would be a terrible decision, and I'd rather keep two kickers than Brock Osweiler. But like you said, Bryce Petty's been probably the best and most consistent quarterback throughout preseason. Yes, he's going against those third and fourth stringers. A lot of those guys, you know, they're not going to make a roster, but Bryce Petty's looked the best. He seems to have a better understanding of the offense than the two that you mentioned. So it's a sin that he's not getting a true chance at that backup spot because you saw him come in against, I believe it was the first game. He came in, he threw that touchdown pass to Isaiah Ford in the end zone. It was a hell of a throw. He looked off the safety. And then the game against Carolina, I mean, you saw him drive down the field. He hit Durham Smythe real nice on that pass. He got hit, took a shot, took that 15-yard penalty, and just kept driving the team down. And he capped it off with, I believe it was a 14-yard touchdown run. So you see Bryce Petty showed signs of improvement, a lot better than what we saw when he almost died in Jersey a couple years ago. So for me, I'd like to see Bryce Petty get a chance. But overall, David Fales seems to be the guy. I don't think anything's going to change that. Brock Osweiler does not deserve to be on any team's 53-man roster. He should go up to CFL and compete against Johnny Manziel. But, I mean, overall, if Ryan Tannehill goes down, that's the end of the season. So I'm not too concerned with who ends up ultimately being the backup quarterback.
Right, and this is probably the Nick Foles effect, the fact that we're a little bit preoccupied with the backup quarterback position because we just saw one beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, so God bless them. But so I think that's why we're a little bit too involved in this conversation. Like you guys said, the season's over if Tannehill goes down. And really, for anybody clamoring for us to have invested any type of money or invested some significant draft capital in this past draft, only 10 quarterbacks on top of starting quarterbacks, so about 42 quarterbacks in the last 3 years on average, even attempt over 100 passes. So how much resource allocation should you devote to a position that is very likely not even going to play any type of significant snaps on your team? So if we're looking at it specifically with the Miami Dolphins, though, I'm erring towards David Fales, if anything, because Osweiler just simply turns the ball over way too much, and we can't have that in a backup quarterback. I'd rather have a below-average game manager that's not going to piss the game away for us. So I'm definitely on the Fales boat when we're debating Fales versus Osweiler. But man, this year, if we're in a parallel universe and Ryan Tannehill has that injury in training camp like he had last year, if we're in the same position as we are right now, we'd very likely have the number one pick with the backup quarterback situation that we have.
And I think that's what it all comes down to, right? Because we saw last year Ryan Tannehill went down to camp, and kudos to Adam Gase for trying to salvage the season. I understand completely what he was trying to do last year, bringing in Jay Cutler, thinking that he could push the team to the playoffs. And I give tremendous respect for that, instead of tanking the season and going up for, you know, whatever pick that they were going to get. But both of you hit the nail on the head, and I mentioned this the other day as well, I think in a private conversation to someone, if Ryan Tannehill goes down, the season's done. Like you both said, we saw, like you said, Houts and Sutton, we saw Nick Foles lead the Eagles to a Super Bowl victory. We saw Case Keenum lead the Vikings to a tremendous run deep into the playoffs. Those are not the norm. That is a rare situation, and it just so happens to happen twice in one season on two different teams. But what you usually see when a backup quarterback comes in is mixed results. You saw with Brett Hundley with the Packers. You've seen it with Matt Moore of the Dolphins. You can see it, of course, with Jay Cutler. You had your ups and your downs and your roller coasters, and backups are backs for a reason, folks. Okay, you occasionally do get the guy who jumps out at you like Tom Brady, like a Nick Foles, although the jury is still kind of out on him. Let's not pretend that he is one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league. Yes, he won the Super Bowl with the Eagles, but he was also once a starter who got relegated to a backup, and then lightning, he caught lightning in a bottle last season, but there is still no hard evidence or hard proof that once he becomes that starter, he's going to continue to thrive like he was with the Eagles last season. You saw Case Keenum do the same thing with the Vikings, and his career has been a roller coaster as well. So backups are backups for a reason. You bring a guy in like David Fales, a guy in like Brock Osweiler, God help us all. At least David Fales will show some flashes, but is he going to lead the Dolphins to a deep playoff run? Unless he's the next coming of Tom Brady, I don't think so. And I don't think he is the next coming of Tom Brady. So, you know, if Tannehill goes down, let it be. Tank the season. You're going to be up there for a quarterback, picking in the high round and the high part of the draft in the first round. Because let's face it, that'll be Tannehill's third major injury if he's out for the season. And the Dolphins just can't rely on that moving forward. Sign.
Let's not forget that we had Dan Orlovsky, one of the most prevalent backup quarterbacks of recent time. And what he was saying on the show was, yes, of course you have to be prepared to play, but one of your main roles as a backup quarterback is figuring out how you can support your teammates. And that's one of your main obligations there as a backup quarterback, is learning how the politics there in the locker room and everything like that, where's it lacking and how can you come in there and build the team and strengthen the team in that way? So a lot of intangibles go into the backup quarterback position. So it's have to take that into consideration with backup quarterbacks.
I thought the offense looked crisp when Tannehill was in the game. I thought he was very deliberate with his throws, very decisive. Look down the receivers a little too much for my liking. I hope that changes once the regular season starts. I hope they're just doing these short passes. And I think this will be their offense, but I hope that they're just doing these deliberate passes, these targeted and laser-focused-like targets, just to kind of not show too much of what they're going to be doing in the regular season. But I liked the way Tannehill delivered the ball. I liked where he knew he was going. I liked how he found a soft spot in numerous zones around the field. You could tell the improvement he's been making, especially with his footwork. It's a tremendous, tremendous shift from year one all the way up until now. And that's credit, 100% credit to Adam Gase and his coaching staff there. Other things that I saw pop out, I think Kenyon Drake ran well and hard. I think he's going to be a superstar if the Dolphins remain committed to running with him. I think Raekwon still looked a little slow and hesitant. We saw what happened with Kiko running to the Baltimore sideline. Obviously, he was a little dazed and confused after he landed on his head. I think the defense needs to tighten up, and I think they did tighten up on the run defense part after a few mishaps. Early in the game, they seemed to straighten it out and did well from that point forward. How's any quick takeaways that you saw from this game?
TJ McDonald, a guy who I've kind of been down on a little bit. I used to joke that, you know, he looked great in shorts and Miami gave him a contract extension, but he was everywhere. I mean, he was down in the box, played a little bit in that linebacker roaming role, made some huge stops in the run game, some in the pass, and then Minka Fitzpatrick. I mean, he just seemed to be all over the field. He seems like a guy who can lock down that nickel spot, can drop back at free safety and defend deep. I mean, he just seems to be the real deal. So those two guys jumped out to me. I mean, it was nice to see Mike Gesicki finally get a catch too. So it was some positives and definitely things to build on. And I'm excited to see what the Dolphins can do, you know, once the regular season starts, because like you said, you see these guys, Raekwon McMillan, that was his third game. He played, what, three quarters now in his professional career. Sure, he looked a little bit sluggish, but he still was an improvement from the week prior. So you just want to keep seeing these guys continue to build. Vincent Taylor, I mean, he's starting to show up big. So there's definitely some positives, some guys who really jumped out there, and some that you really can't wait to see what they do once the games start to count.
I know some of the depth O-line wasn't able to give much of a pocket to some of the backup quarterback candidates there, but I thought the first team offensive line looked pretty solid. Unfortunately, we saw a couple of fumbled snaps from Ryan Tannehill, so hopefully that was simply a mental lapse of some kind, or, you know, a moisture issue or something like that. But hopefully he got all those types of things out of his system in that game, because we would, of course, not like to open a game by fumbling a snap and be immediately into a second and 14 situation. But back to another good thing that I saw, Jerome Baker, you saw why he earned the starting position recently. He can move around, guys, so I think he's going to be a nice addition to that linebacker group.
Preseason game four is coming up against the Atlanta Falcons. We're not going to talk about it much at all because it's guys on the bottom of the roster just fighting for their final spot, fighting to make that team, and really you probably won't see the starters play at all, and that's it. We're headed to week one, September 9th against the Tennessee Titans.
Around the NFL.
We're going to take you around the NFL with the latest headlines. Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Josh Dobbs and Arizona Cardinals signal caller Mike Glennon are drawing interest this week as teams look for reliable backup options moving forward. The Oakland Raiders, soon to be the Las Vegas Raiders, want at least two first-round picks for Khalil Mack. General manager Reggie McKenzie has fielded calls in recent days from teams interested in trading for Khalil Mack, but the asking price is a little too high right now for many teams. The Cleveland Browns cut linebacker and former Philadelphia Eagle Michael Kendricks, who has been charged with insider training. The U.S. Attorney's Office of the Eastern District of Pennsylvania announced Wednesday morning. Kendricks had formally drawn interest from Miami in possible trade talks, but it didn't go anywhere, as you can see. Josh Rosen, Arizona Cardinals quarterback, will not play in the preseason finale. Sam Darnold set to start week one against the New York Jets. In other news, Sam Darnold set to hit the turf soon after against the Miami Dolphins when they visit the week after. The Jets traded quarterback Teddy Bridgewater to the New Orleans Saints for an undisclosed draft pick at this time. And our biggest news is Aaron Rodgers will receive $80 million by next March, as he agreed to a four-year, $134 million extension. It is the biggest deal in NFL history. Sutton, Aaron Rodgers is an absolute beast. The money these quarterbacks and players make is ridiculous. Do they deserve this type of money? Or are we going a little too crazy these days with paying these athletes money to last you many lifetimes, while teachers and doctors and lots of other things out there make a much bigger impact in life? What are your thoughts?
That's the business side of the NFL. It's simple economics. It's what people are spending to come watch these games, and it's what the collective bargaining agreement has kind of allowed things to happen. So Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback on the planet right now. I don't think there's any question about that. We can say, you know, from a championship standpoint, Tom Brady, of course, but Aaron Rodgers, I think, is the most talented quarterback on planet Earth right now. I don't really think there's an argument from where I'm standing. So if someone's going to get paid, it's him. And I'll also admit that I'm a little bit biased towards Green Bay, because I went to Lambeau Field when the Chad Henne led Dolphins went into Lambeau and won in overtime. I was there and just had such a great experience there. The people in Green Bay, it's just such a cool little tight-knit community, and I parked in somebody's front yard and they dude brought out lawn chairs for us. So I just associate Green Bay with this really relaxed atmosphere, and then Aaron Rodgers is a pretty relaxed, confident guy, and I would trust him to go toe-to-toe with Tom Brady more than anybody in the NFL right now, hands down. So that's the guy. If he's gonna get paid, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I'm all on board with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it's crazy to think about all the great quarterbacks that Green Bay has had, and he might be the most talented of the bunch. So good for him. He deserves it. Like Sutton said, he's right up there with Tom Brady. I mean, if you're doing – we talk fantasy football a lot. If you're talking fantasy football, Aaron Rodgers is probably the number one quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he just consistently puts up those big numbers. His arm strength, it just his accuracy, everything about him is just your – everything you'd want from your prototypical quarterback, from your franchise quarterback. And a lot of people are going to say, you know, look at this guy, all the success he's had. Miami had a chance to get him. There's no guarantee that he would have done what he's doing right now if Miami had drafted him. And in fact, there's probably a better chance he wouldn't have, because we're the Miami Dolphins and stuff like that just doesn't happen to us. So great for Aaron Rodgers. No one else is more deserving than him. And I'm excited to watch him continue to play, because, I mean, he's not in the AFC. He's not one of the Dolphins' rivals. You can root for Aaron Rodgers, and I know I do.
The market is the market in the NFL, and that's what it's going to be. And you're only going to see deals get bigger and bigger and bigger from here. Owners make billions and billions of dollars, and the market is what the market supplies and what the market demands. And with the quarterbacks in the NFL, you don't get a lot of good ones. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best in the NFL right now, one of the best in NFL history. So guys like him are going to hit the bank and hit the bank big. Guys below him are going to hit the bank, not as big, but they're still going to hit the bank. And while you may compare it to doctors, to educators, to everyone else, unfortunately, the world they work in, their boss, their CEO, their owner, whatever it is, are not making billions and billions of dollars per year. Is it right? That's not for really me to decide. Is it wrong? Again, not really for me to decide. I'm just giving my opinion. My opinion is just looking at the facts, and the money is where the money is. And that's, I think, the best way to describe it. I don't know if you two had any last thoughts on that.
I mean, not really. I'm a frugal guy. I have four kids, so it's not like I can just go out and spend lavishly or anything. So I would prefer other people live frugally like me. And I think there would be less waste. And I think there would be people would be a little bit happier spending less money. But, you know, that's just my personal opinion, and it's not not anything I'm trying to project on anybody else, but that's where I stand.
Yeah, and we once talked about it. We compared, I think Todd Gurley came out and said about, you know, you see these basketball players and baseball players, what they're making compared to these guys that go out there and, you know, they get these crazy injuries. We hear about the CTE, all that stuff. So, I mean, you might think Aaron Rodgers is getting paid a lot, but then you go and look at what he's getting compared to a pitcher in Major League Baseball, pitches what, 30 games a year. I mean, it's apples to oranges. It is what it is. This is what sports is, and we can be upset, like you said. I mean, you got these guys who they're doing open heart surgery or something, and it's a whole different market. They're entertainers. Aaron Rodgers is getting paid like one, and when you compare it to those other sports, it really doesn't seem that bad.
Fantasy football. We'll be right back.
And it is fantasy football season. We are right in the thick of everyone's draft. The third week of NFL preseason is done. And that is typically the sign around the nation, around the world, that you are free to draft your fantasy teams. And son, I know you've been in some drafts. Hautsa, you've been in 35 drafts. And myself, I've been in 2 drafts already. And I have one more coming up on Saturday before I jump into some best ball leagues before the start of the NFL season. But Sutton, you were talking to us earlier today about a dilemma that you had in the second round of your draft. So for our listeners, can you just rehash that for us? Tell us where you were picking, what the dilemma was, and then we're going to talk about it openly on air. Because I did tell you when you texted us, said, let's save it for the show, let's talk it out in real time and give something for our listeners to enjoy and digest. What is it, Sutton?
Cool. So I'm in a 12-person league, and I had the 9th pick. So as we're going through the first round, Saquon Barkley falls into my lap at 9. Now, I think pre-draft I wasn't huge on Saquon Barkley, but I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity for him to put up some serious stats. So I think injury is really the only thing that gets in the way there. So I can count on some points there. Then when I'm coming back to the 16th pick, I had 3 guys on the board. And looking back on it, I think I may have jumped the gun a little bit. But I want to hear your guys' thoughts. So I had 3 guys on the board. And keep in mind, I just took a running back. So I had 2 wide receivers and a running back that I was looking at. I had Keenan Allen on the board. I had Michael Thomas on the board. And I had Christian McCaffrey on the board. And I ended up taking Michael Thomas. And for anybody just a little bit new to fantasy football, Michael Thomas is just behind Antonio Brown in the last 2 years in terms of production and fantasy football and standard scoring leagues. So I felt pretty good about the consistency there, and that's what I wanted out of an early round draft pick. But there was that voice in the back of me that was like, man, Christian McCaffrey could really do some damage. And Norv Turner's, you know, he's always had a thing for running backs, always able to get them to put up some pretty monster stats. So after I picked Michael Thomas, I was thinking, maybe I should have went McCaffrey there. So what do you guys think? Would you have avoided both those guys and actually went Keenan Allen, who very well could outproduce both of them?
Wow, man, that's quite the scenario to be in. I mean, I know when you text us, you mentioned Michael Thomas and Christian McCaffrey, but I didn't even know Keenan Allen was in there, so that kind of changes things up. I mean, I love Christian McCaffrey. He's been a guy I was high on throughout the draft. Drafted him in a Devy league and just watched him continue to produce. I mean, he's a PPR monster. He gets those yards on the ground. You can see what he's going to do this year in that North Turner offense as far as what we see him throughout preseason. And then in the passing game, I think he was like, it was insane how many receptions he got. So that would have been a huge get. But for me, I mean, you got your running back. You got Saquon Barkley, who, whether you wanted him in the draft or not, I mean, if he falls to 9, you're going to take him, and he's going to put up big numbers. You almost have to walk away with that 16th pick with a wide receiver. And Michael Thomas or Keenan Allen, I mean, that's a coin flip. I would probably look at Keenan Allen's, you know, injury history, what he's been hurt a couple times throughout his career. Michael Thomas, like you said, Sutton, I mean, he's been one of the most consistent wide receivers in fantasy football in the entire NFL these last few seasons. So it would have been tough. I don't know what I would have done, because when you got that clock beating down, you know, you might end up just going with your gut. And at that time, your gut might say Keenan Allen, your gut could say Christian McCaffrey. But overall, I think when you look at the rankings, when you go into a pre-draft, you had to have had Michael Thomas ahead of both of those guys, I would think. And I think you made the right decision getting out of there with a running back and a wide receiver.
It's always tough because you don't know what the board looks like, but you know, I think what Hout said, I think it's absolutely true. And I want to throw you my situation here. It wasn't my own personal situation, but here's what I saw unfold in a draft that I was helping with. Person had the number 2 pick in the draft. Number 1, Saquon Barkley, which is, I think, is crazy. Saquon Barkley going number 1 overall. But this person took Alvin Kamara at number 2. Todd Gurley went number 3, then Le'Veon Bell. I mean, he personally, I'm all in on Todd Gurley, right? I haven't gotten Todd Gurley in any of my leagues yet because I haven't gotten the number 1 or number 2 pick. I had the number 6 pick in one league where I picked Kamara, and I have an auction league where I ended up getting Zeke. for about $60. But number two, this is what always gets me, right? Because you go by this average draft position, and if you're a good drafter, if you're a good fantasy player, you always use that as a tool to kind of see where you should be drafting guys. And if you're drafting guys too early, too late, if you're getting good values and so forth. But if Alvin Kamara is a 6th ADP, right? And that means for those listening, average draft position, where people, they take, you know, the averages of all the mock drafts and they look at everything and all the actual drafts and they just take the average of where that player is drafted. But if, does it come down to personal opinion at that point, right? Because I don't think this person made the wrong move taking Kamara over Gurley or Bell. For me personally, I'm not high on Bell at all. The guy has never played a 16-game season in his career. And him sitting out another year of training camp, coming back week one, we saw last year, took a few weeks to get the rust off. Had a nice season, but still for me, I just think there's too much risk involved with him. So Bell is off my board completely, which maybe sound crazy, but it's just my personal opinion, right? I said I'm all in on Gurley, but Gurley was on a team that was one of only three to average 30 points per game last year. Will they be able to replicate their offensive success? That still remains to be seen, of course. But we know what Kamara can do in a Sean Payton offense. We know that Sean Payton's offense has thrived for many, many years. We know that Drew Brees is one of the best quarterbacks in the game. We didn't see Jared Goff do this until this year with Sean McVay, but our team's going to figure them out. I don't know. But the point is drafting Alvin Kamara at 2 a bit too high when you still got guys like Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell on the board? Or does the difference of 4 slots really not make that much of a difference?
So it's ironic because in my draft, Gurley went 1 and Alvin Kamara went 2. And I remember thinking, wow, I kind of same reaction. And don't get me wrong, I think Alvin Kamara's game is phenomenal. He put up absolutely monster stats last year in a pretty prolific offense that's still led by Drew Brees and coached by Sean Payton. So there's no really real reason to feel like there's going to be a significant drop off. But here's the thing about running backs. And one of the things we talked about with Matt Harmon when he was on our show is running backs are just crazy volatile. And when you're drafting in the first round, you know, if you have the top 10 guys, historically, about 2 of those will finish where you think they are. So that's not really the method that seems to work. So why not go in kind of crazy? And maybe it's just crazy enough to work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Sutton. Let me give you my scenario. Okay, I had a 3rd pick in a pretty big draft. I think it was Gurley that went. Then Le'Veon Bell, and I was sitting there, my heart was set on Ezekiel Elliott. I kind of thought David Johnson, Alvin Kamara, like you guys have said. I mean, the production could be there, but I'd rather see another year out of him before I go for that. Antonio Brown crossed my mind, but I ended up going to Ezekiel Elliott, and then it came back around to me, and all the receivers, I mean, Michael Thomas fell right before my pick, and I was sitting here biting my nails, I was getting all nervous, taking massive gulps of my beer, and I thought Michael Thomas was going to fall into my lap with my 2nd pick, and he got taken. So I looked at the board. Devontae Adams was gone. Keenan Allen was gone. I mean, all these receivers were gone. And I looked at it and I said, you know, I need a receiver. I panicked. I went with Mike Evans because he was the best available player. I don't like the situation until Jameis gets back. But, I mean, I read something today. Mike Evans has never finished in the top 12 in fantasy. So I took Mike Evans, and then it came back around, and I took Tyreek Hill, which I think might even be a better receiver than Mike Evans. My question to you guys is this. I sat there and I considered, you know, I knew I wasn't going to get a pick for a while. I knew that at this point I ended up with Lamar Miller, so that was my number 2 running back, which I think will be fine. But overall, I sat there and I debated whether or not I should reach for Kenyon Drake, a guy like Jerick McKinnon, who I was really high on. He got that, I believe it's a knee or ankle injury, and kind of got him out of preseason. So what would you guys have done? Would you have doubled up on wide receiver? I mean, like I said, I love Tyreek Hill, but overall, I sat there and it really, really, really took a lot out of me not to go after Kenyon Drake and do the homer thing, because I think we all believe Kenyon Drake's going to be a monster, and getting him there and with the 3rd pick in the 3rd round, I mean, it was something that crossed my mind. What would have you done, Kanata?
Yeah, so this is where that whole ADP comes in, right? Because you look at your ADP list and you say, well, this guy shouldn't be drafted this high, so I'm not going to really touch him right now. He should really be drafted a round and a half later than what I'm thinking. But if I think he's going to do better than what these experts are predicting, why not take him at that point? It's like what you see with NFL teams all the time, right? They may take a player that we think they took two or three rounds early, but they have such a conviction on this player that they feel that they don't want to take the risk of losing that player. And then you get the other side that says, well, yes, we understand the risk of losing that player. We understand your conviction, but you got to know the board and know the game and understand that you can get that guy later and then pick up someone else before that. So it's finding that balance. And you said Mike Evans, and I kind of cringed when you said you took him. I'm not high on Mike Evans at all because of the reasons why you said he's never finished as a top 12 quarterback, I mean wide receiver. And then Jameis Winston is suspended for the first several weeks. And it's just going to take a while for them to get their chemistry moving again. And I personally have been burned by top wide receivers in the past. I feel like the mid-tier guys like the Emmanuel Sanders, like Julian Edelman. Yes, he's suspended for four games, but when he comes back, he's going to be great. Like Adam Thielen, like Stephon Diggs, like even Danny Amendola, like Kenny Stills. Those guys, those slot receivers, like Jarvis Landry, they pick up just as many points as those big number one receivers. With in the PPR formats, I should say, right? So for me, I don't like to spend big on wide receivers early in the draft. So for me, Houts, I would have passed up on Mike Evans there. I love your Tyreek Hill pick. I love that pick. I think, but again, you know, you get your ADP, you start looking at that. You know, you get maybe Devontae Freeman was on the board. You know, that's a really tough spot for you, Houts. That's a really, really tough spot for you. Do I go McKinnon there? I think McKinnon's going to do great, but he's unproven. And San Fran, man, I don't know. Maybe I would have taken Mike Evans. Honestly, was Hopkins available?
No, Hopkins went in the first round, so he was long gone. It was just Mike Evans was the best, and it was by, like, we're going by ADP. I mean, it was by a mile, but
yeah, because you're not going to draft Kenyon Drake that early. You're not going to draft McKinnon that early. McKinnon's going round three.
Yeah, I panicked, but I thought it was the best bet, and I guess we'll ultimately see how it plays out.
Yeah, man, that's a crappy spot to be in.
I personally would have went McKinnon there just because I would trust a running back in a Kyle Shanahan offense over Mike Evans, who I don't see anything remarkable about that offense. The one thing that I will say in a positive, since we've kind of been pooping on him at this point, is the fact that Tampa Bay may not be a very good team this year and probably going to have to throw a lot, you know, in the second half of games and probably have the stat sheets and that type of way.
Yeah, and I love McKinnon all throughout, you know, all the draft processes that I've done in fantasy football. I was real high on him. Then he had that injury in preseason. I just thought about it. Like, I think that was something that kind of hindered him in Minnesota there for a little while. And if he's already getting hurt this early in preseason, who's to say it's not going to be a nagging injury that continues on? So I do think that I could have taken McKinnon. It would definitely cross my mind, but I just love getting that running back and the running back and wide receiver get 1-1, and then you kind of just build from there. So that was kind of my thought. But also, man, I just didn't know if, you know, Kenyon Drake, if that was a homer pick, if that was me fighting that. I think he's good enough to go in the third round, but I felt like it was a little bit of a reach, and I couldn't justify that as a homer, believing that that's the only reason I should have taken him.
It is the season for fantasy football drafts. It is the season for drafting. Enjoy it. Embrace it. And if you have any questions at any time, please let us know on Twitter, at @KanataNFL, at Houts, and at @SuttonLacesOut. And the Dolphins will face off against the Atlanta Falcons this coming Thursday, 7 p.m. in Atlanta. Again, as we mentioned at the top of the show, starters not in the game, reserves battling for their final roster spots. Houts, what are you looking for as they close out the preseason?
Sutton's talked about it all throughout training camp, all throughout preseason. Just stay healthy. Don't let anybody injured. I mean, yes, these guys are battling for a roster spot, but there's definitely going to be some of those depth players, the Chase Allens, the Stephon Anthony's, you know, the Cordrea Tankersley's. They're going to be playing in these games. So let's just make sure everyone can stay healthy. We get out of it without any significant injuries. And I do want to see Bryce Petty. I know we've talked about him a little bit here. It almost seems like a foregone conclusion that he's gone and it's going to come down to Osweiler fails. But I want to see Bryce Petty get a chance with the second team. Whether or not it happens, that's yet to be decided.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be Fails versus Osweiler for that backup quarterback position, I think it's going to be determined in this game. And then, you know, it's just one more day closer to the regular season, so you got to love that aspect of it. And we're going to be getting into the 37 people are going to lose their job here pretty soon. So we're going to be going down from 90 to 53. So we're going to see where we stand in some of those position groups. But one thing that I want to mention, Minkah Fitzpatrick is the highest graded rookie by PFF. I thought that was pretty cool.
Minkah has been playing lights out this preseason. I wish he was playing center field, but if TJ McDonald keeps up the way he was playing against the Baltimore Ravens, I think we're going to be just fine. We made it just about through NFL preseason. There's one more game to go. Backups play on. And then we head into the regular season against the Tennessee Titans on September 9th. That's going to do it this week on Finsider Radio for Certain the Creepy Soccer Dad and House MD. I am MC Money. Thank you for listening to Finsider Radio. We will talk to you next time.
That was Finsider Radio, part of the Finsider.com and the SB Nation Network.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, because we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins.